Accession number 28635, reel number 1.
Right. Paul Ryan, reel 1. So, if as threatened, Paul, I could ask you first of all about your background. If you could tell me something about where you were born and your education, particularly your art education.
I was born in Leicester in 1968 and moved to Loughborough when I was about 10. And then I came to London when I was 16 and I had a place on a foundation course at Chelsea. And I went there thinking I would carry on to do my BA, which I didn't. I left and started exhibiting straight away in a little
gallery.
What were
you doing at Chelsea? What particular aspect of art?
Well, a foundation course covers all sorts, so it's a little bit of everything.
That would include photography, I imagine, as well.
Yes, although that particular course focused on painting at the time, which was what was interesting me then. And I left there and I was making oil paintings, and I started showing them in a small gallery called the Mercury Gallery in Cork Street, and they showed a lot of, I suppose, that they would be called neo-romantic painters, English neo-romantic painters. So that was very exciting at 17 to be doing that.
Were you a neo-romantic painter then? Was that your interest at the time?
I didn't realise I was, but I suppose they were the artists that interested me, so... Craxton and Minton and Vaughan, those people.
Yeah, but what's the essence of neo-romantic art for people who don't know this world, would you say?
Well, I suppose it was a palette as much as anything. It was figurative painting with a very muted palette of blues and browns, and it seemed to be very much an insular movement, and that it was confined to England or the UK, and it didn't really relate too much to what was happening on the continent.
So, how did your art develop from this? I'm wondering how you got into, the IWM sort of
thing. Yes, well, moving on from there, I suppose I always felt that the things that interested me in the drawing and the sketchbooks, which I was carrying on all the time, was being lost in the movement to the paintings. There was a quality in the sketchbooks and the small drawings which I was always trying to keep but couldn't. And I was asked to do a show in Norway just off the sketchbooks, and that was the first time that I suppose I realised I didn't, in a way, didn't need to be painting. I could just focus on that. And I think really that's, in the end, what led to this exhibition at the IWM, because I'd gone on then to do an MA in drawing, and I'd focused on what the qualities of sketchbooks and small, quick drawings were. And I think that related to all of the material, really, which is in Captive, which is the small sketches and drawings made out in the jungle by the prisoners of war.
Yes, I suppose sketches and war, it's almost, they go together so well, don't they? People in extreme situations having to make a quick note of it.
Yes, and I think having to is the key, really. Feeling that there's some sort of release in doing that, and that it's psychologically beneficial if you have the opportunity to be able to do that. And certainly I think in my life that was the reason I carried on all the time. I found it very useful way of coping, and I recognised that in the work that was in Captive.
So would you have gone along to the museum, to have seen what was going on there in the way of their art? They've got a very big art collection, I understand.
Yes, well, I do go there quite regularly, with it being nearby, and also I suppose a lot of those, as I call them, English neo-romantic artists were war artists, and I had been along to see those exhibitions, and also there'd been a connection with my work previously a few years before, where they bought a drawing from the Gerwood Drawing Prize, which was a large drawing but taken from a very small sketch of a response to a visit to Auschwitz. So they'd bought that 3 years earlier, I think.
Yes, when did you go to Auschwitz?
It was about 5 years ago now. And I went because I was curating an exhibition in London of East European drawings. So I was looking around for contemporary artists focusing on drawing. and went to Poland to look for some.
So your exhibition came through your contacts with the people in the art department in the IWM, did it?
Yes, it was Richard Cork, who was one of the judges at the Gerwood Drawing Prize, and he recommended that I should approach the IWM to see if they'd be interested in buying the drawing. And the person I approached was Angela Wade, who that was my first contact with her. And then she asked me if I'd be interested in the Far East project a few years later.
Would this have been involved in any way with the Millennium project? You know, the fund of money that the IWM got for visiting war sites. Do you know about that?
I'm not sure. As far as I know, it was a lottery funded project.
Yeah, and that was the what year would that have been?
You're referring to the Far East project?
Yes, when
it
started.
I think it was this year. I think it was this year and last year.
Yeah. I know there was a schools project as well, wasn't there, related?
It's There Past Your Future, I think it was called.
So what was your brief from the IWM when you undertook this project?
Well, it was related to one of the Their Past Your Future projects for a school in Oxfordshire, and their itinerary was really the base for the memorial sites that I was going to visit. And I suppose Angela was curating the exhibition and knew my work quite well by then, and I think thought that I would take my notebooks and make work in that way if I went on that sort of trip. Which I did, I suppose, by this point I was working in the sketchbooks in a much more conscious way and really manipulating them as a sort of medium in which, once you understand how people read a sketchbook, you can begin to manipulate that.
Yeah. That's sort of an interesting point. You know, what is your opinion of how people read a sketchbook?
Well, I think they even if there are contradictions within a sketchbook, people somehow assume that what they see in it is true. They think it's very personal or private, like a diary. So actually, once you're aware of that, you can begin to put information onto it which relies on people assuming it's true. So it becomes quite a powerful medium in itself to amplify the things you might want to say.
Yeah, I suppose because people with a sketchbook rather than a painting, the finished painting or drawing, am I right, they would think that this is done rather like a photograph, this is the reality of what you were seeing?
Yes, that's right. I think reality is the reality for the individual artist, at least. I mean, I think that sketchbooks are very close to photography and filmmaking or installation, perhaps, in that they're not so dogmatic as paintings. I think if people see an oil painting or a bronze, they think that the artist has decided to tell them something. Whereas I think if they look at the peripheral material, the notebooks and sketches, they think that they're discovering the artist might not be choosing to tell them. So once you're aware of that, you can work with that.
Did you have to produce set pieces for the museum? You know, I was wondering how constrained you were on your trip.
No, not very constrained, really. I think Angela made the comment she thought I would have made more drawings. When she first looked through the books on my return, I think there were about 150 pages of drawings and notes. And then when she saw the exhibition, she said, I didn't realise there were so many drawings, because of course some of them were very small, a centimetre or two, hidden in the writing and the notes. But she didn't. She didn't, and neither did the War Museum give me any sort of specific brief to go and draw in a particular place or cover anything in particular.
Did you have any thoughts yourself about the function of memorial art? you know, in the context of war? Did this the sort of philosophical aspect impinge on you too much?
Well, I didn't set out with that, but it became one of the main themes sort of quite early on in the trip. I realised that I was contributing to a sort of positioning by working for a war museum, and I was visiting the equivalents, sort of like in Japan, the peace museums, which also positioned the events in particular ways. So that became interesting, both in terms of looking at how those institutions positioned the events in relation to how I was also doing that and contributing to that.
What did you know about World War II and the Pacific War? You know, did you find it necessary to read up a lot on this, or did you know much about it?
I didn't know very much about it. Any knowledge I had of World War II was really about the war in Europe. And I did read a couple of books before I went, which I think, knowing so little of the geography and the events, I found quite confusing. It wasn't really until I was there travelling around it began to piece together, just in terms of the geography and some of the major events. But in terms of positioning and your earlier question, I resisted the way things were presented as sort of linear caused events, and my impression was that it was more of a maelstrom that you would never really fathom. And I think that was one of the points that I kept trying to put into some pages of the sketchbooks, but at the same time I would then counter that with other pages which showed the sort of perceived view.
So could I ask you now then about the trip you made? You know that 6 months, I think you mentioned earlier, was that right?
For the trip?
You were away.
2 weeks.
Oh, 2 weeks for Thailand and Japan?
Yes, it was a very, very quick trip. And it was really the same, exactly the same as the school trip was going to be. It was quite an intense schedule over those 2 weeks. So really, it was a case of sort of moving on each day, being out from 6 in the morning and working till midnight each day. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed that intensity, actually, over the 2 weeks.
And you went alone, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. What would you have taken with you, you know, in terms of art material, travelling that way?
Well, I took what I nearly always travel with, which is a small A6 Daler sketchbook, which has about 80 pages in it. So I took a few of those, and a small Winsor & Newton watercolour box that has about 14 watercolours and a selection of pens and pencils. Really very similar to the materials that are exhibited in Captive, from, I think, Ronald Searle's watercolour box and a few brushes and pencils. Not very different from that.
Right, so could you now talk me through, first of all, Thailand, I think, and where you went and what you saw?
Well, I flew to Bangkok and spent the first night there, and then went to Thonburi Station, which is in the northwest of Bangkok, which is the beginning of what was the Burma Siam Railway. And I travelled up to Kanchanaburi and stopped there and looked at the memorial sites there and the cemetery, which, when you're looking for information there, keeps referring you back to Maidstone in the UK, which is quite interesting, having gone so far. And then I carried on up as far as you can go to Nam Tok, which is the last functioning railway station now. And then I went from there a little bit further in taxis up to the Australian Museum at Hellfire Pass, and from there I walked on into the jungle a little way to hammer and tap cutting, and a bit further on and then had to start making my way back.
Yes, I was thinking of the time, you know, that you had a limited time
yes.
you had to do this. Were you learning about what had happened in the war to the men who built the railway, as well as the Japanese, of course, and the indigenous people?
Yes, I mean, I had read these books before I'd left, but I suppose being in the environment and the information that was on a lot of the signs and in the museums was adding to that as I went along. I mean, I'm not sure if it's me, whether I'm particularly cautious, but I suppose I didn't necessarily take all of that at face value. I was waiting for more and more confirmation all the time. And it did seem odd how there was this sort of mixture of adopting sections of the railway, so that the Australian Museum had been built at one particular point, and that seemed that was somehow Australia, that part. And the Thai museums were very different and presented a different image of and picture of what had happened then and also what was happening now somehow. You felt very much you were in Thailand in the Thai museums and that you were in a Western country in the Australian part.
What were the actual memorials like? Can you, representing the different nations?
Well, for example, in Thailand, they actually had human remains in the museum, which had been dug up along the track, and there'd be a sort of whole, there'd be all sorts of objects all mixed together in an apparently random way. And the display would be very casual and sort of broken down compared to this very sleek Australian museum, which was very clinical.
And you did sketches of the museum, of the memorials, did you?
I didn't so much draw the memorials. I tended to draw the environment where they were. For example, in the Australian Museum, they had a slab of, I presume, some kind of granite, which was in a perspective that if you stood at one end of, I think it was Hellfire Pass cutting, if you looked down it, the slab continued the perspective of where the tracks would have been, which had been removed. So I didn't actually draw the slab, but I drew the cutting. And I'd seen, I think it was a Ronald Searle drawing of the cutting, and I was interested in being in the same place and drawing the same view as an artist 60 years ago.
Could you find that? You know, was it still looking the same? That
well, I didn't have the drawing with me, so I couldn't sort of think, well, have I matched it up? But I was aware it was the same cutting. And I remembered his drawing was full of figures carrying the rock away. And when I was there, it was empty. But I was also, it was interesting how uncomfortable it was. You know, the humidity was still the same and there were lots of mosquitoes biting me while I was drawing. And I felt very uncomfortable to sit there for half an hour and draw, and yet I'd come from my air-conditioned hotel and was going back there. So that really gave a sense of what those people were, you know, experiencing day after day, as well as doing all the labouring and work and, you know, obviously not going back anywhere that would be comfortable to recover each night.
Yeah, that's a very interesting contrast, isn't it?
Mm.
You sitting there in leisure. Well, you know, you had a job
relative
to do.
Relative leisure, yeah.
But being able to take your time and, as you say, go back to comfort.
Mm.
But you obviously identified very much with the men. It would seem from what you say that you could, given the environment which you've described and the temperatures.
Yes, I think that gave an inkling at least into some sort of experience. I mean, I'd hesitate to say how close it was in any way. But,
was it a sort of peaceful place?
Yes, it was very beautiful. in the jungle, you could see how threatening it was in terms of how uncomfortable it was to be there even for a few hours, but aesthetically it's very beautiful. And I remember walking through the next cutting, which was Hammer and Tap, and there was a spring running down through the cutting, which had eroded part of it. So although most of it looked man-made and cut by hand, this part had become moulded and quite natural. And there were some wild bees had got had made a nest there, and you could hear them humming inside with the water trickling. And it was very beautiful. But I suppose that knowing how that was built, you immediately make the associations of the worker bees and, you know, the work going on. And that was, had a sort of had a quite poetic link, I suppose. But yes, it's that you're confronted with that really as a visitor or tourist now, I think.
What were the actual memorials like? You know, how did you respond to those? I haven't been to this part at all, but I know there are, you know, veterans do go annually and visit the railway. I wonder what there is for them to sort of relate to.
There's a lot, and there's a real trail, if you like, that you can, I get the impression you can take at various levels, from people who take an air-conditioned bus to the bridge over the River Kwai, and they get the tourist train that goes backwards and forwards once, and then they go back. So there's that, and then other people stay and seem to do more. But there are almost countless small museums that you can visit, which, you know, many of them are set up in a way to bring tourists in, and they're selling things, and others have been there for a long time.
Did this raise question in your mind about the purpose of such museums, you know, and memorials?
Well, yes. I mean, some are definitely to provide some income for local people, and others are to present a sort of a national view, I would say. And I'm not sure that I certainly wasn't making any hierarchy about one being better than the other.
You know, thinking of the River Kwai, and, you know, you've explained the different visits, you know, the types of visits that can be made in comfort or, you know, on these trails. There's a lot of mythology associated with that, isn't there? You know, the film by Alec Guinness, for instance, which most people, if they think of the bridge over the River Kwai, would relate to that, wouldn't they? But I understand the story was quite different.
Yes.
And I wonder, you know, if this sort of altered your perception of it, you know, when you... Did you see the film before you went?
I'd seen it quite a few years ago. I already knew that the film story was different to the reality. But that's the sense you get all the way, really, that there are lots of anecdotes and stories, and you never know, you know, how close to reality they are. But my impression was that, really, as far as the part that interested me was where the work had been done that was most difficult, I suppose, where I think there was a diary that described returning to Nam Tok as being returning to the civilised and comfortable part. So really, I only just touched on the parts of the jungle that were the most difficult right at the end of my trip there. And travelling all the way up was the bit that wasn't really where it happened. I think where it happened was in the jungle. And I did, I talked to somebody who was not a prisoner but was in the Far East in the Second World War, and he said he wasn't particularly interested in going back because where everything happened was in the jungle and he wouldn't be able to find where those things were. So in that sense there aren't, you know, the memorials are in accessible places, they're not in the places where after the events happened, apart from, I suppose, Hellfire Pass and the cuttings.
So in a way, some confirmation of what you were doing, the way you approached it, going to the environment where the work was done.
Yeah, so I don't know how conscious what that was at the beginning, but that grew as I was there longer. And
So would you have been there about a week?
Less, well, yes, with the travelling, 5 days really, with the flying there. And it was 2 weeks altogether, so I think it was 5.5 days in Thailand and then 5.5 days in Japan.
Yeah. Did you feel at the end of the 5.5 days in Thailand that you had really, it was satisfying the amount of work you had done and what you had gained for it, for the installation, for yourself as well?
Well, I suppose I knew I was working as hard as I could and I was getting as much done as I could, and I didn't know at that point what I was going to do with the material. So at that point I was just gathering the material and fingers crossed it would be enough.
I can imagine it's very difficult to assess, to make some assessment, isn't it? If you're working so intensely, in such a short time, of what you've got and is it enough and have you done the right thing?
Yes, I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. You either decide what you're going to do in advance, in which case you're going to block out, what might be a more interesting way of looking at it, or you just take the risk of, well, I'll work and I don't know what I want to do with the material. But yes, at that point, I think at the end of the time in Thailand, I still didn't know what the main points were. But at the same time, I knew I'd done as much as I could.
I suppose you also got a sense, because you're going on to Japan after that, of the sort of behaviour of the Japanese towards the prisoners, and how they were pushed on the railway. Did that, this gave you some sort of background to go to Japan, did it? Or were you still able to go to Japan with an open mind?
Well, I think I was cautious anyway about this, the... the Japanese did this. I mean, even in Thailand, I got the impression that it was some individual Japanese, and that there were lots of photographs of apparently very good relations between some of the Japanese and some of the prisoners, and lots of anecdotes about artists being given materials by the Japanese and swapping drawings even with Japanese artists. So I knew I was going to go to Japan and, if you like, see the other side of the coin, but I hadn't got any view that it was black and white.
End of Reel 1, Paul Ryan.